This is the final episode of Film Critics Weekly. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
Mic drop.
You're live.
Good morning, good afternoon, wherever you're watching us. It could be either time. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Film Critics Weekly. I, of course, am Scott Menzel. And we have a big announcement. But before we go into the big announcement, we want to introduce the panel today. Joined, of course, is Nestor and Lupe. Lupe, where can they find you? Introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Lupe. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, Cinemovie TV, and on the web, cinemovie.tv, my website.
My name is Nestor Bendancor. I am the president of this amazing organization, Hollywood Critics Organization. And hopefully after this episode, I'm going to remain as the president of this organization.
Well, we'll see.
Yes.
So that kind of ties into the big name, Change. Of course, this show used to be presented by the Los Angeles Online Film Critics Society, and that is no longer the name of this organization. It is now the Hollywood Critics Association, HCA. Much easier to say, and we are so excited about that. And with that comes some more additional news. This show, Film Critics Weekly, as well as some other content, will be launched on a brand new network. Thanks to the wonderful people here at Popcorn Talk, the Hollywood Critics Association will have its own network coming in January. So we're going to be taking this show over there, as well as some additional new shows to be made. A lot of conversation about that in the next couple of weeks, and we'll have a full lineup hopefully early in January. So stay tuned for that. And we thought the best way to kind of end this show on this network, and this network is wonderful. Popcorn Talk has been wonderful to us, and we're always thankful to Kevin, Maria, and the rest of the team here who produces this show week after week. Thank you so much from the bottom of our hearts. We really appreciate you accepting this show and this organization in your family with open arms. This episode today is going to be dedicated to the end of the decade in film. We will be doing a special tribute to the end of the decade at our award ceremony on January 9th, 2020, here in Hollywood. If you're around, it's going to be a hard ticket to get to. So, you know, you could stand outside and wave to us and we'll say, hey, how are you? Thanks for your support. But we wanted to talk about our personal 10 favorites of this decade. Going to be a very different list, I'm sure. We're going to start off doing like a 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. We're each going to do 10, then we're going to 9. You know, you get the drill. Let's start off with number 10, and we're going to start off with Nestor.
Yes, and let's start with remembering that these lists are very subjective.
Yes.
They are very incomplete. And they are very unfair by nature, you know, because when you highlight something, it means that you're going to exclude many things. So keep that in mind, people. Okay. Number 10. Number 10. I'm going to start with a foreign film. And usually that means, oh, it's a prestigious drama. Why? I'm going to pick The Raid 2. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a movie that I think that the first one is amazing and it can be in the conversation which one is better, but the movie grows. I mean, it's not just in length, but in scope. It's not only about action, it's also about intrigue, about power, about the crime organizations, and it's the whole package. If you love movies, you're going to get a little bit of everything. So I'm very impressed with Gareth Evans as a director. Sadly, we haven't seen him working, in a big action movie in Hollywood. So that's my pick number 10. Yes.
How about for you, Lupe?
All right, I'm going to cheat a little bit. So I actually picked the Planet of the Apes trilogy.
Okay.
Because it's unique when you have three films and they're all reboots that are really, really good. So, and I was surprised to learn the first one, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, was 2011. I thought it was the previous decade. So the fact that they accomplished this in one decade, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So that's my number 10. And all the movies were really, really good. It was a shame that Woody Harrelson wasn't nominated for anything for War for the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, I agree.
Because he was brilliant. It was just on cable the other day. Wow, his performance, very, very powerful. And I think just that whole movie and the themes of it, that's what's good about these movies, the themes.
And Andy Serkis. I mean, yeah. Nothing.
I mean, it's just, it was an unbelievable trilogy. And I don't think we're going to see anything like it.
No, again. And this is the good reason why Disney should not reboot it right now.
Yeah.
They should give it some time.
Leave it
give
as it some is.
Time. They can do a sequel.
They can do a sequel?
Yeah, they can continue with Caesar's
Son.
Oh,
yeah, mm-hmm. I guess so. I didn't even think about that.
But I don't think it's going to be R-rated. Let's see.
Yeah,
we'll see. Yeah. I want to also start my list by saying exactly what Nestor said. My top 10 is going to be a lot different because it's going to be films that I feel personal about, personal connection to me in some way, shape, or form. And some of them are going to be ones where you're like, of course that movie's on this list. So it's a nice combination of personal, like if you know me, what movies I would like, and then also movies that a lot of people are going to have on their list. So I'm going to start off with my number 10, which is Personal Shopper. This was a hard one to pick between this and Clouds of Sils Maria. Both directed, written and directed by Oliver Assayas. I think I butchered that name, but you know I love you, buddy. You're a great director. And it stars Kristen Stewart. Both of them actually star Kristen Stewart. And it's a fascinating take on a ghost story and one about a personal shopper in Paris, played by Kristen Stewart, who gets some weird text messages. And it's done so creepily in this film, and so the ending, I think, of this movie, like, kind of leaves the door open for so much conversation and so much debate, and that's something that I love. It's not a flashy movie in any sense of the word. It's a very quiet, subdued performance from Kristen and the story itself, and yet it leaves that long impression on you, and that's why it's my number 10.
And it's haunting.
Yes.
I mean, in many
ways. Yeah.
And it gets scary.
It really does. Yeah. I mean, there are certain scenes in that movie. And again, this is a very low-budget film. You can tell that this movie was probably made for like $1 million or $2 million. A lot of it either takes place in a business office or in a house. And it's a lot of it relies so heavily on Kristen's performance, and she just kills it.
Yeah.
See, I haven't seen that, so I'm going to put that on my list.
Okay. Number 9 for you, Nestor.
And something I forgot to mention before. My criteria, it was movies that were ignored by the Oscars when it came to the film themselves, either Best Picture, Best Foreign Language, or Best Documentary. And it's interesting because so far that's going to be, it has been kind of the pattern between these picks. Okay, number 10, let's go with Sama, including a movie from Latin America. Lucrecia Martel, it's a phenomenal director. And, you know, everybody talks about Roma and film like that. But this is such a big film in terms of scope. I mean, it's hard to compare to anything else. But this year we have something like The Nightingale, or we can go back to something like The Mission, when you're talking about people trying to cope with the elements and this clash of different cultures that is not something not only specific to the characters, but they have a bigger, you know, goal to talk about big issues. So I find it very interesting. And just to give you a brief synopsis, Don Diego de Sama, Spanish officer of the 17th century settled in Asunción, awaits his transfer to Buenos Aires. It sounds very boring, but from the filmmaking point of view, there are so many shots and scenes that you don't know how they pull it off. So if you love movies, check it out.
All right. I also want to preface it by saying I picked movies that I think made a difference. It made not so much in general, but just what it did for filmmaking.
Great.
And it takes things in a different direction. So mine is John Wick. Why? Because it was a different type of action hero. I think with Bruce Willis and Die Hard, he started off this smart aleck kind of superhero. And you see like Rock, you know, Dwayne Johnson and Vin Diesel and all these other, they're smart alecks. And I think John Wick took that away and made it this serious guy who's an action hero. And now we're seeing copies of that. So I think it took the action hero in a new direction. And I really liked it because he's a man of little words, right?
Absolutely.
And it's the opposite of any of all the other superheroes that we've seen.
And it's very interesting because this film, just like your previous pick, is now three movies, all that came out this decade, mm-hmm. and all have seen great success
yeah.
and has gotten very little love from any sort of awards
yeah.
at all.
Yeah, I think it changed things for the genre.
Yeah, it's almost in a weird way, almost like how the which is interesting because they both star Keanu Reeves,
yeah.
almost like how The Matrix did yeah. in the 90s.
No, and I like it because I think we are going to have a few movies that you can debate between the first one and the second one mm-hmm. in their respective franchises. And that's another one. It's yeah. like, you see the first one better than the second one?
Yeah. Great pick. For me, my number 9 is going to be the one where I know everyone's going to be like, really, Scott? Really? and I don't care because I love this movie, and that's The Greatest Showman. Greatest Showman is such a breath of fresh air when it comes to movie musicals because so many movie musicals are based on a stage play. Mm-hmm. This is one of the original movie musicals, something that we don't get to see in Hollywood really at all. We remember Producers and Mamma Mia, and I know, you know, Into the Heights just dropped their trailer yesterday. These are all adaptations, stage adaptations. Yeah. Greatest Showman is one of the first movies, I think in like the last maybe decade or two, that is an original concept that can actually go now from a movie onto a stage. And the movie is set up almost like a stage play. In almost every way. The songs are incredible. They move the story along. They each mean something to the way that the plot shapes up. The characters, Hugh Jackman, I mean, seriously, this guy can do no wrong, whether he's playing Wolverine or he's the principal in Bad Education or if he's freaking Barnum in Greatest Showman. He's just great. And the supporting cast here, you know, Michelle Williams being able to step away from the serious roles, do something a little bit more lighthearted and fun is always nice to see. Zac Efron reminded me why I used to love Zac Efron in this movie, and Zendaya, she was great as well. So that's my pick, and I think this is just one of this is if people don't like this movie, it's going to be hard to deny that at least it's the feel good film of the decade and one that has proved that with the box office success.
Yeah, I was surprised with that one. I found it annoying.
I'm
not a big musical fan, but for some reason that movie annoyed me.
It's okay.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the movie as a whole, but when it comes to the spectacle, the music, mm-hmm. I mean, the songs work better than the script, and obviously they are part of the script, but I think that the songs are better messengers of the, you know, the intentions of the film and what it's about than the dialogue.
Right.
But overall, it's a very strong musical.
Yeah, and I mean, when you look at that, that's why I'm saying, and that's my reasoning behind this, is because if you watch a stage play, a stage musical, most of the focus is on the songs. Is the song catchy? Does it move mm-hmm. the story forward? There's so many plays or Broadway musicals where the dialogue's not the greatest, but it's about the actors who all these actors sell the material. And the songs and the lyrics,
mm-hmm.
and they all work. And that's why I say it's a great musical.
Yeah, and I agree. And something to compare with that I mean, in the opposite spectrum is Frozen 2. I think that the songs don't move the story forward. They just keep hammering the same things all over again, especially sad. We are sad. Okay. Number 8, right? It's going to be Paddington. You know?
Oh, wow.
Another one that you can argue, is it better the first one or the second one? And I love Paddington. It's a great allegory for immigration, you know, mm-hmm. and anti-xenophobic sentiments. I think that's very relevant. And you have probably one of the best films mixing a protagonist that is not live action in a live action environment. You have to go back to Who Framed Roger Rabbit to compare something to this level. Paul King did a phenomenal job. It's such an endearing, stylish, warm movie, the second one as well. So Paddington had to be here.
Absolutely.
Another one I got to add to my list. Jeez. All right, so my next pick is Gone Girl.
Okay.
I pick movies that when the movie ends, you're like, Wow. What did I just watch? Like, that is the most effed up story.
And I thought that my relationship had issues.
Yeah. Yeah, I just thought it was a great movie. It was just so unique. And when films are unique, it just leaves me breathless. And that film and the performance, what is the actress' name? I completely forgot her name.
That was the, oh my, Rosemary. Yeah, Rosemary Pike.
Yeah, she was brilliant. And yeah, we have not had a good femme fatale in the longest time. And so to watch her in that role was so juicy. Like any actor who watched that or actress would have been like, I wish I had that role.
It was interesting because that also was, I think, a career changer for her for a little bit. They were trying to push her for the next couple of years in these movies that were sort of beneath her performance.
Right.
I forgot there was that war movie. I can't remember the name of it. I shouldn't talk about stuff when I don't know the exact name. But there was just a couple movies that came out afterwards where I remember they were pushing her because of that movie. She's like, remember, did you ever see her in Gone Girl? She's great in that. and I think that was very short-lived, unfortunately. Yeah. But she is a great actress, and that movie really proved it.
Mm-hmm.
My number eight, and this is very surprising to me, that a Disney movie made the cut, and that is Zootopia. And I think Zootopia made the cut because it's probably the ballsiest Disney movie ever made. Yeah. You talk about movies that deal with timely issues, police brutality, segregation, very heavy themes, but done so in such a clever and fun way. Zootopia is it. This was... You know, I called that the day I saw it that it was going to win Best Animated Feature. And I don't know if Disney will ever make something like this again. It didn't hold back. Mm-hmm. It had so much to say. And I think it started conversations with children, with their parents. And it's so important for stories like this to exist, even from a company like Disney. And I kudos to them for doing it.
Yeah, bullying was a big theme about that movie.
Yeah. And I mean, they did it with cute characters. You know, that's like they found a clever way. And this was one of the few times where I think Disney truly outshined Pixar. It was one of those times where they really outshined Pixar.
Yeah. Let's go to number seven. And again, I don't have any animated film in my list, so apologies. But remember, these are films that were not considered for Academy Awards, and some people say, your name should be there, but okay, sorry. Let's go with The Babadook.
The
Babadook, it's a new classic talking about horror, and especially since it's available on Netflix, everybody had a chance either to see it or to recommend it easily. You know, you want to see a good horror movie tonight? Go see The Babadook. And it's a movie that works in so many levels. It's a kind of a psychological thriller. Is this two people under the power of paranoia? They're going insane. Is there something supernatural going on? Jennifer Kent not only directed, but created the story, the script and everything. I'm talking about female directors. Such an amazing, amazing job. So The Babadook, yeah.
Well, I do have an animated film on my list. So number seven, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, great choice.
Like I said, I pick Game Changers.
Yep.
And I think that one, because it was risky, you're switching out Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it so, so well. And it was nice to see the directors get, after being fired from the Han Solo movie.
Yes.
To see them have some success. And then after watching this movie, I actually thought, what would have Han Solo looked like with these guys at the helm? Even though it was a different direction than apparently Disney and Lucasfilm wanted to go.
Yep.
But I was like, I really want to see... that cut doesn't exist, obviously. But
right.
Because it was never... They never got
like
to that
point. It's not like the Snyder cut. It doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist. But yeah, that one was a big game changer. And again, that feeling when you finish watching the movie and you're like, that was perfect. That movie was perfect. Where I sat in the movie theater like, wow, that was really, really good.
I think that was like the first time where I've seen an animated movie where in a very long time where I'm like, wow, this is great for people of color. This is great for women. This is great for like everyone. This is great for animation. Like this has literally had something for everyone.
It's
to
great
offer.
For geeks.
It's great
it's
for
a
geeks.
Very, very geeky film.
Yep.
If you analyze the screen, I mean, what different versions of characters, dimensions, characters that come from different mediums, like Spider-Pig, you know, interacting with this other noir character voiced by Nicolas Cage. I mean,
Oh, I love that. Yeah, and it's right. effect in animation, you can play with these known, like Batman, the Lego Batman movie. I was going to put that on my list, but I didn't make it. But you can do so much in animation and get away with it, and it's accepted. Yeah. Versus live action, you can't.
Right.
So that's why I love this, you know, animated version.
I completely agree. This is the... My seventh pick is the conclusion to one of my favorite film trilogies of probably all time, and that is Before Midnight. Before Sunset, Before Sunrise, and now Before Midnight. This is a beautiful, perfect example of less is more. Two people walking down the street, having a conversation, gripping, engaging, entertaining, funny, adorable, loving. There's not enough words to describe how perfect this film is, and the chemistry between Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy is just spot on. I don't think there'll be a better on-screen duo in this generation. I really don't. They're just great. And what I love so much about this movie is the way that it ends. And me and my wife have totally different viewpoints of what's going to happen or what happened at the end of the movie. And that's what makes independent films so great, usually, is that they have these endings where they don't spell everything out. You kind of like left and you're like, let's have a conversation. What do you think happened? And what was the reasons why you think that happened and went that direction? Great, great film. Richard Linklater, just, this is like, those are his like his babies. Those are his best movies.
And there are many films that try to achieve that and fail.
Oh my God.
Miserably.
Yes.
Let's go to 2015, a movie that I remember. I was doing a live coverage of the Academy Award nominations. And when I realized that this movie wasn't there, I was like, what is going on right now? Carol.
Oh, yeah.
I love Carol. It was my favorite film of that year.
Oh, is it, what's her name, Cate Blanchett?
Cate Blanchett, Rooney Mara, Sarah Paulson, directed by Todd Haynes.
That was a good one.
It's such an intimate film. It's so romantic. You feel like a voyeur sometimes. It's not the intention. You don't have like the male gaze there, but you feel part of the relationship. And you see the relationship grow. And I think that this forbidden love stories, you know, in the past years have come from these stories, you know, from and gay, lesbian, different, you know, kind of ways to connect with each other, to express with each other, and to fight against, you know, society. We had this year a Portrait of a Lady on Fire. We had Call Me by Your Name. We had Moonlight. And I think that these stories are the best manifestation of that, you know, that struggle to not just have the connection with somebody else, but to live the life that you want to live and you cannot. And I think that this movie was so tasteful, so beautiful. I love it.
One of the movies I just want to just give it some love since it ties to what you just said that is sadly just like missed my list by like this much is Blue is the Warmest Color. That is a film that I saw in Toronto, and my jaw dropped. I mean, it just two actors, actresses who I've never seen before in a movie, in a completely subtitled film, and I just felt the passion and the rage, and my heart broke watching that movie, and it was just, God, it was such a great movie.
That was your bonus.
That's my bonus.
I got a bonus list too here. All right, so my number six is Arrival.
Great.
By Denis, how do you spell it?
Denis Villeneuve,
yes.
Yeah, so that's my favorite. Like, another film that I was speechless when it ended.
Yes.
It was just so beautifully constructed. Performance by Amy Adams was just phenomenal. Everything about it was just the cinematography, the messaging behind it. Again, another about fear of the unknown. Immigration. It was just like all those themes, like it hits you over the head. And it's very subtle. Like sometimes you have to explain to people what these meant.
Yeah.
And the fact that people fear the unknown, you know, which is very, I mean, this is before, you know, the Trump era, but it still resonated
even more so now.
But me as immigrants, as you know, I'm a product of immigrants. it's always been a theme for us. You know, it's just amplified now.
Yeah.
But that movie spoke to me at the time with all these themes, and it was just a perfect movie.
That's a fantastic film, yeah. Too. My number six is Nightcrawler. Dan Gilroy, boy, he just knocked it out of the park. Jake Gyllenhaal, this probably like best performance of this decade.
Oh, yeah.
I want to say that.
Yeah.
Just a haunting film about news capturing and
ambition.
How everyone wants to get the big story no matter what it takes.
Mm-hmm.
Rene Russo has a very small role in the film, mm-hmm. but my God, she's a powerhouse as well. And man, I don't think I'll look at entertainment news or just journalism in general the same after seeing this movie.
That's true. Yeah, that
absolutely.
Was a powerful performance.
It's kind of the network of our times.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sadly, they couldn't repeat that with Velvet Buzzo this year.
No.
Yeah. That's a pity. Okay, so top five.
Yeah.
Right?
We're at number five.
Let's go there. And I think I saw something here. Logan, number five for me. I was looking for the perfect superhero film that would kind of represent not just what it has been great for the past years, but what it could achieve in the future. And I think that Logan is the way. This is the way. It's such a powerful film, so contained in so many ways, but at the same time, you know, he's a guy with powers. He's a mutant, and he has claws coming out of his hands. And I think that you are in love with the characters that you know, the new characters. It's so emotional, so powerful. I was crying. The second time I saw it, everything around, you know, the Patrick Stewart character, and it was even more affecting. So maybe it doesn't represent kind of the spectacle side of that category of films, but in terms of story, it's fantastic.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
That one later. all right, my next one, number five, is Attack the Block.
Nice.
So
nice.
John Boyega stars in it.
Yep.
That's when I first saw him on screen. I'm like, that guy's going to do something. It's a great film. It brings sci-fi into the urban area. And so you've never seen that before. And it was just great. It was really funny. It's comedy. What would the genre be? Sci-fi comedy?
Sci-fi comedy, yeah.
It's a unique genre. Yeah.
Maybe even then, like action a little bit in there. I mean, it's a perfect blur, the lines
sci-fi,
of genre.
Sci-fi, horror, adventure.
Yeah. So it was, and then, you know, it takes place in the suburb of London, but you can still relate to it. And it's these characters who are urban. They're, I don't want to say poor. They're underrepresented.
Mm-hmm.
But it's how they, in their own way, are going to set up an attack for these alien intruders. And it's hilarious.
Yeah, it's a great film.
Yeah.
Great film. Very underrated, too.
Yes.
Very underrated. My number five is Her. Spike Jonze, mm-hmm. writer and director. I don't, you know, like, thinking about actors, I don't know if there's been a stronger actor this decade. You know, I think Adam Driver's a close second.
Mm-hmm.
But Joaquin Phoenix. Between The Master, Her, and then to end out on Joker.
Yeah.
Just where he goes, I don't know. But
somewhere
the
dark.
Performance is just incredible. And this one, it was one of the first films to ever have the idea of falling in love with a piece of technology with a voice. And Scarlett Johansson just, you know, her voice really captured why someone would fall in love.
Yeah.
And it was a beautiful and intimate story, one that's very different, very bold. I also think it was kind of risky at the time. And again, it's Spike Jonze is just a master filmmaker and storyteller, and he goes with weird ideas and he runs with them, but they end up being something so different and so unique. I think back to Adaptation and what he was able to do with a movie like that. And I think Her is one of the finest works of art of this decade.
Yeah, phenomenal. Number four, Scott, won't you be my neighbor?
That is actually my number four, too, so we can both talk about it together. Yes.
Let's do it.
There you go.
The documentary, yeah. Right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Not The Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, which is not anywhere on any decade.
We didn't talk about this.
No.
This wasn't coordinated
or
rehearsed or anything. That's amazing. I mean, I'm not surprised because I know that you really love the movie.
Yeah.
But talking about big snobs, But this has to be one of the most shocking exclusions from the competition, talking about Oscars.
Oh, my God, yeah.
We were all betting that it was going to win. This is close to Parasite not being nominated for Best International Films.
Right. Oh, I agree.
Incredible. And the film, I mean, for someone like me, that I'm an immigrant and I don't have the shared past with someone like Mr. Rogers to discover this person, to see all this footage, not just from the shows themselves, but from private, you know, collections or whatever. It was so moving, so affecting, so relevant. And to see him, you know, nowadays we have this argument about political correctness and being a social justice warrior or something like that. He was a social justice warrior in the best sense possible.
Yeah.
And he showed you the way and how through kindness you can aspire to change the world. Mm-hmm. Very inspiring, very moving. The movie is kind of therapy. It's very cheap therapy. And I love it.
My heart was broken when this movie wasn't nominated for Best Documentary. I remember seeing this movie at Sundance, and I walked out of the movie, and I was just, like, in tears. I grew up watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, and, you know, it was a show that I remember very fondly. You know, it almost, in a weird way, led to the creation of other shows like Pee-wee's Big Adventure. If you look, not Pee-wee's Big Adventure, but
Playhouse.
Pee-wee's Playhouse. If you look at a lot of the themes from Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and Pee-wee's Playhouse, a lot of it is similar. There's a lot of learning going on, a lot of interaction with kids. Different tone, obviously, sold more for merchandise. What I love about Fred Rogers is that he was a conservative, he was a preacher, and he stood for everyone. Mm-hmm. He took a child aside and he spoke to him or her, and he was an adult, and he had a real conversation, and he wasn't afraid. Oh, you want to talk about death? You want to talk about divorce? You want to talk about some serious issue? No problem. Let's have a conversation about it. What he did for people with disabilities, what he did with people of color, what he did for public television. Mm-hmm. It just this is a badass legend, and one who did that badass legend with kindness and hope, and just never was part of the system. Fought against the system. And I said this, and I'm quoted for this, and I stick to this quote, one of the best documentaries ever made. Without question.
When it came out, it was funny. I didn't want to watch it because I didn't want them to sully any image I had of the guy, which is funny, because then later I read reviews, and I was like, oh, okay, it isn't doing it. Because a lot of times documentaries, they dig deep into their psyche. And sometimes you don't want to find out.
Right.
Because you have this image of them. So another one I got to put on my list to watch. But then I forgot about it. But initially I didn't want to watch it because of that. I thought, well, I don't want to learn anything negative about him. I already have I have him up here on a pedestal. I don't want to knock him down a few notches.
Yeah. No, so. I was so moved by this film. And I agree with you, Ness. This is one of the biggest snubs in probably Oscar history. Mm-hmm. All right, go for it.
Number four. All right. Rogue One. I know, he's like,
what? Yeah, well, like,
interesting.
Interesting choice. Like I said, game changer, because this is a decade of Star Wars coming back.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's been somewhat disappointing, but Rogue One, initially it took me two viewings to actually enjoy it. Why? Because I think we're so used to the familiar that at first you're like, I don't know. And then I watched it again, I'm like, oh, okay, now you can appreciate it because it was different. It wasn't just fan service, which I think the new Star Wars movies are.
Oh, my
You know,
God.
It's just purely... Like, Force Awakens was just a ripoff of New Hope.
Yes.
You know? And, I mean, I enjoyed it, but I was just like, yeah, I was hoping for something different or to continue the story. I felt like we were stalled, you know? So Rogue One was different. The performances were really good. And even though you knew they were all going to die, because... Who doesn't know that? It was just Diego Luna, and I love the fact that they put Diego Luna in a movie. Or any Mexican in a Star Wars film.
In a lead role, too.
And I think he did really great. And the fact that they hired him despite the accent really says a lot.
Yeah.
Because you always hear about people... I mean, they change Australians and English people to American accents. Why are people afraid
Yeah.
Of people with accents. Yeah. What is that? Why is that
kind
in Hollywood?
Of, the kind of diversity you don't hear about.
Yeah. Or George Guillermo del Toro was telling me that he wanted to cast, in Stories That You Tell in the Dark, the protagonist has glasses. He said previously, suits have fought him against it. We don't want any actors with glasses.
Wow.
Why? That makes no. I mean, that goes along with the accent.
Yeah.
Even if it's an accent from England or an Australian accent. That's just weird to me. So for me, that was a game changer, that Diego Luna portrayed this main character. He has a bit of an accent.
Yeah. Moving on from that, I will just say that without question, Rogue One is the best of any of these new Star Wars movies.
I think the opposite.
Really?
I mean, this Rogue One is the one that it worked the least for me.
Interesting.
Maybe I need to see it a second time.
Watch it a second time. Yeah, the first one, you know, and then I watched the second time. Oh, okay. I like what they did there. Okay, that's cool.
So I guess I go with number three because I already talked about... Yeah. Okay, you were talking about apes. For me, is War for the Planet of the Apes. You know, it's another discussion. Is it better than the first, than the second one? You know, the three are very solid. But what Matt Reeves and company did, I think, is incredible. Andrew Serkis, you were talking about Woody Harrelson, Steve Zahn, he steals.
That character, scenes. Man. He hurts you.
It's amazing. And it's heartbreaking. You know, it's a movie for adults, about adult themes, about revenge, about extermination of a group of entities, beings, people, whatever you want to call it. And I think that is the culmination of a phenomenal franchise, probably the best trilogy when it comes to big movies in the past decades. And it's kind of the proof that with great ideas and with great talent, you can do reboots that are respectful of the past, but they take those themes into a new modern direction. And that was the review that when I was doing it, I cried for a while because the ending is very powerful. So had to be here.
Good. All right. Well, we already touched upon this one. Logan, I think, is a very bold movie. They took a lot of dark turns.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was a shame that Patrick Stewart wasn't nominated because his performance was just gut-wrenching. I mean, and the fact that I was going through taking care of my dad at that time, that just really spoke to me. And my 14-year-old niece who saw it, she loved it because she could relate to it. You know, just the fact that you're taking a superhero genre and making it personal. And just the relationship between Logan and Professor X was just so beautiful. Oh my God. It was just, and they're playing, you know, essentially father and son, and it was just heartbreaking. And then aside from the fact that he's dying, how dark is that?
Yeah.
You know, and Hugh Jackman's performance was just, I thought, phenomenal. I mean, so far the best Wolverine movie.
There is a lot of death in that movie.
Yeah.
There's a lot of death.
That you see and you don't.
Yeah.
In this world, most of the X-Men are dead the beginning.
I don't think I've shed this many tears for a superhero film. I mean, wow. So, I mean, it was just, it felt like an indie film.
Right? That's it.
It just felt like so, if it's like, that's the direction we need to go with superhero films.
A Western samurai.
Yeah. It was just, I don't know. It was just perfect. It was a perfect film, and I'll watch it whenever it's on cable.
No, it's great. For me, my number three is Safety Not Guaranteed.
I love you, Scott.
Colin Trevorrow, this hands down, no questions asked, best thing he's ever touched. It's just a very intimate, small little film about wacky characters, about time travel, Mark Duplass, probably the best thing that Aubrey Plaza has ever done, too. Jake Johnson, just... and this was like almost the introduction to Karen Soney, who we now see from Deadpool and all those movies. This is where he got his start. And he played like this really nerdy like newspaper journalist who wanted to go along with this. It's a beautiful love story, a beautiful film about science fiction, time travel, loneliness, connection. I just love this movie so much. I remember seeing it at South by Southwest and I could not shut up about it. It was just fantastic.
I need to see it again. Number two, The Hate U Give. I mean, this was my favorite film last year. It was our pick for Best Picture, talking about the organization. And again, another film that you see others trying to replicate it and they cannot. It's so powerful without feeling extremely preachy. There is an evident message. There is an evident anger, you know, that you can feel, that you can touch. But it's so genuine and organic that I couldn't help myself but to cry. I cried a lot watching this movie twice, I saw, you know, three times. And everybody, I mean, the actors, Amanda Stenberg, Regina Hall, Russell Hornsby, the direction from George Tillman Jr., spectacular. And it is one of those sad cases when you wonder, did this movie open? Was this considered by award bodies? Nobody talked about it, and it was phenomenal. So, The Hate U Give.
Yeah. Wow. Very good.
All right, my number two, right?
Yep.
Get Out. Again, another game changer.
Yeah, it's a game changer.
Unique plot. You didn't know where this was going. Well, I mean, you saw a little bit of it, but... And just the dialogue is just amazing, you know? And it's... Yeah, just the subject matter was just so odd that... Some people don't like it, but I don't think they get it. I don't think they get the reference.
People who don't like Get Out definitely don't get it.
Yeah, like they don't get it. Like because it's cultural appropriation in the effed up way.
There's so much to date. I mean, and that movie's a game changer for so many reasons because not only do I feel like people of color connected with it, mm-hmm. but I think that was a movie that actually like opened up conversation for like white people, even people who I think were close-minded at the time. They saw that movie and they're like, oh, this is saying something. What is this saying? And then another film where you can watch over and over again and you can pull a little bit out of it and change the career of Jordan Peele.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't love Us as much as I love that movie, but you know, it made him the man that he is today, and he will become a filmmaker for the next 10 to 20 years, at least, because of Get Out and the success of that film.
And it's a masterclass in suspense.
I mean, there's some comedy and everything,
but phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah. My number two, this is probably the most obvious pick on the list, Social Network. Have to say Social Network. You got Aaron Sorkin writing the script. You got David Fichtner doing the direction. And then you have... guest career best performance from Jesse Eisenberg and Andrew Garfield. Both of them. I mean, Andrew Garfield after this movie, I felt like he just was like one great thing after another great thing after another great thing in terms of his performances. Mm-hmm. This is just such an eye-opening film about everything that we know about today and everything we're talking about Mark Zuckerberg and how much of a douche he was
and is
to this day and how he didn't care about anyone and effing everyone over.
Just profit.
Yeah, it's just such a special film and one that I think is kind of timeless. It's a kind of timeless tale and it almost serves as a cautionary tale too.
Absolutely. Number one.
Yeah.
Remember what I was saying at the beginning of, you know, these are subjective.
Yeah. Films? Yeah.
What's coming?
Okay. I know we don't have much time, but let's see if you can guess it. Okay. Once more into the fray, into the last good fight I'll ever know. Live and die on this day. Live and die on this day.
I know because I cheated. I looked over.
I know it.
You know it?
Awesome.
I know it.
What is it?
The Gray.
Oh. I love The Gray.
I think too.
I think I'm the biggest fan of this movie in the world. Joe Carnahan did just such an amazing job. I saw this in theaters three times.
Wow.
And Liam Neeson, Frank Grillo, he deserved an Academy Award nomination. Any nomination as a supporting role. Phenomenal. I think that movie had the kind of the bad luck of coming out at the same time that you had all these other Liam Neeson action films. So it was kind of a joke of, he's punching wolves now. I think that is about life and death. I think that when you see the wolves, you're talking about the representation of mortality and death. And there is a current theme throughout the movie. You have a monologue of Liam Neeson cursing God, you know? And overall, I think it's one of those perfect movies. The ending, you don't know exactly what's going to happen. Like, you don't know what's going to happen with you. When you're going to die, you don't know. The only thing I know is that in my dying bed, I want Liam Neeson talking to me and ushering me into the other side, like one of the persons that we see at the beginning. Yeah, yes.
Oh, wow.
You're dying. You are. Okay.
What year was that? It's been a while.
2012. Oh, yes.
Oh, okay. Wow. Max, do you like that movie? Yeah. I don't know about top 10.
I don't know about top 10 either, but hey, isn't that what makes film criticism so great?
Yeah.
And film in general, because every movie connects with people differently.
Oh, so we come at it a personal angle.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, so my number one, which is probably not a surprise to people who follow me, Parasite.
Oh, really?
Yes, that movie almost changed my life because I was like, who wrote this? Who's the director? I went in there with really no knowledge of it. So it was just like a really nice surprise. And again, to me, themes. The theme of this movie, it's a foreign language film, but it's universal. Anybody who's been in those, like the rich versus poor. And it's such a game changer because it's not stereotypical of classes. You know, it's actually the lower class trying to pull a fast one on the upper class. So you don't mm-hmm. see that. You usually see the sympathy is on the lower class and the rich people are the evildoers.
Yeah.
But it's a mix of both.
Right.
Yeah. So I thought that was a genius. That
yeah.
he's not placing blame on it. Everybody, it's all a circle. You know, everyone's has a little blame in it.
And then the people in the middle.
Yeah.
Also, like the middle class is actually incorporated into the film too.
Yeah.
In ways that they're kind of get the worst of it mm-hmm. in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Because stuff happens to them.
Yeah, I mean, the first scene is they're trying to steal somebody's Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
They're moving around the house to find the reception. They're like, oh my God, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's the kind of people we're dealing with. Right away, it informs you what kind of people we're dealing with. They're the parasite. But then later he changes it up. But who's the parasite? Like,
that's, yeah, that's...
I'm talking about directors of the decade.
Yeah.
You know, Bong Joon-ho.
Yeah.
Phenomenal work.
Yeah. No, he's...
He's got a good body of work.
He's got a good body of work. And the thing that I will say real quickly about Parasite is that what you mentioned about foreign film. It's a foreign film where I think people are not going to mind reading the subtitles mm-hmm. because it's so deeply engaging.
Yeah, it's physical.
Yeah. And it has so much to say. And we talked about this with another film. Different genres. It becomes a horror movie in some ways. It's a drama. It's a comedy. It's a thriller. It just works really, really well across the board. And that was a film, Nestor can tell you this, that I walked out of it the first time I saw it. I said, it was good. I don't know if it was great. And then I saw it again when I went to Toronto. And I was like, wow, this really was great. Like now I'm like, I see it like... You mentioned some movies you do have to kind of like, I think it's the hype, right? With
yeah.
movies, like
yeah.
sometimes where you have the hype, and if you don't get in before the hype is already there, you kind of walk into it and you're kind of like, it wasn't really that great.
Yeah.
And in other cases, it totally kills the movie, and then you're like, never lives up to the hype. My number one pick is Short Term 12.
Hmm.
You talk about a very interesting game changer. Short Term 12, I've spoken about this a lot on this show. Anyone who knows me, I grew up in a household with foster kids. Big part of my life. It's the reason why a movie like Instant Family moved me and spoke to me so deeply. But Short Term 12 it's an unforgettable film for me. It's a movie that I fought so hard to see at South by Southwest. It was so hard to get into this movie because it wound up winning the Audience Winner Prize, and I wound up seeing it the very last screening. And I interviewed Brie and a bunch of these actors who are now huge stars. And that's something where we should talk about is that Brie Larson wasn't really a household name back then. Rami Malek was not a household name back then. Lakeith Stanfield, not a household name. Caitlin Never, not a household name. And Destin Daniel Cretton, again, not a household name, and now is doing Just Mercy, and he has a big superhero movie coming out in 2 years. This is a game-changing movie for everyone involved, but it is a beautiful film about troubled 20-somethings, people who live in the foster care system, and the struggle that what they deal with and being abandoned and just having a conversation, how much that means to someone, and those little small intimate moments that will change someone's life. You talk about a lot of movies that you cry. This is another one, like Won't You Be My Neighbor, where I just bawled my eyes out after I saw it. Just beautiful, powerful stuff, and just so subtle and so simple. Just the kindness of just someone, when someone's upset, going to the door and talking to the door and trying to get them to cool, you know, calm down and cool, become cool and collected. It's just wonderful, wonderful film. So
awesome.
So this was very unique list from all of us. Probably one of the most unique lists that you'll probably find this award season, or at the end of the decade, I want to say. You guys have any closing remarks before we end this?
No, I think that's the point, right? I mean, lists are not kind of final sentences, are the beginning of a conversation.
Yes.
And they also should, in an ideal situation, you know, offer something that most people haven't heard of.
Yeah.
And that's what's kind of the idea, the goal here.
And provide a watch list, too. I know I've been like, oh, I got to watch that. I got to put that on my list. Yeah. And, you know, people are always looking for new stuff to explore.
That's what I think is interesting, because I think so many people just, they go down a list. I've read a lot of, like, decade lists so far, and I felt like, okay, of course that's on there. And I have a few of those on there, but I also feel like you were saying they were either game changers or something that really stuck out personally for me. But I wanted to go with movies that I saw that I feel like not a lot of people talk about. Mm-hmm. And I think we all did that in a lot of ways. So thank you so much for sharing. So we do, unfortunately, have to wrap this up. Where can everyone find you?
You can find me running the bilingual Munoz website, desdehollywood.com. In Spanish, you can listen to me and watch me talking about movies on YouTube on Nestor Cine. And then I do a couple of weekly shows for LA Times en Español. And you can find that on their YouTube channel.
All right, my website is cinemovie.tv. I got interviews and reviews. I'm on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, cinemovie.tv.
Sounds good. And you can find me over at weliveentertainment.com, Twitter and Instagram, The Other Scott M. Thank you so very much for watching and supporting this show. We look forward to seeing you in the new year on a new network. Happy holidays, everyone, and we'll see you next year. Take care.
Happy holidays.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.